You know, the knob is the job. I did not take this job to throw ladders. I did not. I took the job to squirt water. That was the idea, you know. I thought we were doing it a lot more often than we, you know, Johnny and Roy had us going a lot more to a lot more fires, but you know, that's why I joined the fire service, was to put the water on the fire.
Firehouse Vigilance presents the Weekly Scrap, a podcast dedicated to the never-ending fight against complacency.
Corley Moore, Firehouse Vigilance. It is Weekly Scrap number 219. This is a first for me and a first for the Scrap because we have never had a co-host before. And after tonight's shenanigans, may never again. He is always lurking on the Scrap, finding your questions. But tonight, he is in my city. So tonight, Kyle Romagus is co-hosting the Scrap.
Glad to be here, man. I'm stoked.
Tonight's guest is the one and only Captain Ron Smith. He is a 32-year veteran of the fire service, having served the last 25 years with the Gary, Indiana Fire Department, where he serves as the company commander at Squad 4. Ron has worked for volunteer, combination, and career departments. He is an instructor for the Indiana Firefighter Training System and instructs at schools and conferences around the United States. He's a field staff instructor for the IFSI at the University of Illinois. Ron is a current member of the UL FSRI Technical Panel for Search and Size Up. I have been looking forward to this one for a while, and it is my absolute pleasure to have you on as the guest of Weekly Scrap number 219. Welcome, my brother. Ron Smith.
That's my pleasure, man. And 219 is also the area code I'm representing. So that was very fitting. An accident, I'm sure, but still.
Everything's planned. Everything's planned. Right. I was waiting. Is there anything I missed? Anything you would like to add to the intro?
Not that I can think of. I have three lovely kids, one grown adult, and then two on their way to being adults. But and a lovely wife who supports me.
Solid.
She's currently supporting me, watching the kids, you know.
Audience, get your questions primed and ready for Ron. I usually tell you at this point that Kyle is in the chat, lurking and ready to grab your questions. But you don't have to worry about it right now. You can see his face. We're going to have some fun. Right, let's get to the sponsor so we can get to the Scrap. First off, the OG sponsor of the Scrap, Kehoes. Check them online at kehoes.com. Follow them on Facebook, Kehoes. Affordable Drill Towers, home of the Affordable Drill Tower, the Affordable Standpipe Prop, and introducing the all-new Affordable Bailout Prop. Firefighter-owned and operated, you can pump and roll using the Affordable Standpipe Prop. The Affordable Standpipe Prop fits through most classroom doorways for standpipe theory, and then you roll it out into the parking lot and pump for realistic flows and pressures. It comes with up to 7 standpipe valves that can be upgraded to BRVs or customized. Call Steve, 844-55-TOWER, or drop an email to info@affordabledrilltowers.com. Firefighter safety and accountability starts with being able to quickly find and identify individual firefighters operating on the fire ground. Identifier Safety combines the best in photoluminescent materials for durable firefighter identification solutions that can glow for up to 20 hours with no switches, no batteries, which means being able to rapidly identify firefighters by name, unit, or assignment, even under hot fire conditions. All specifically designed and tested for the rigors of the job. Be seen on scene, identifiersafety.com. And of course, I love Flame Decon. So, all that being said, we're ready to start the Scrap. My brother Kyle?
Yeah, man, I'm ready. I'm stoked.
Ron?
Here in OG.
I'm ready, man.
All right.
Here to go.
I cannot have Ron Smith on the Scrap and not talk first and foremost about training seconds. So let's kick it off there. And I just want to know, where did it start from?
Well, it started, I do a class in Ohio, the Ohio State Fire School in Bowling Green, Ohio, with JJ, Champ, Steve Robertson, Paul Oxema, Ryan Marshauser, a bunch of guys, Ed Farley, and the late Jimmy Ellis. But, you know, I was talking, we were having some cocktails, and I was telling Champ, I said, it's kind of funny, man. Bobby Halton never calls me to do training minutes. I think I'm just going to do training seconds. And I did one, you know, just joking around. We had an acquired structure in Toledo, and I had this kid running a saw, and I was just talking, you know, just moving my lips, really. I wasn't saying anything. And then when he shut it off, I said, training seconds. And it stayed in the circle. It was in the circle for the whole year. Then the next year we go back, and there's a young guy. We're cutting metal bars on an acquired structure, and there was an exposed stud bay, and it lit the rock wool insulation on fire. And he was really wanting to put it out. And I was like, it's okay, man. It's not going anywhere. He's like, he had the water can. He really, really wanted to put it out. So I was telling him not to panic. But then when they went to lunch, I did a training seconds. You know, if you get a fire in a stud bay, put it out. And that was it. And then I had Steve Robertson backing me up on the water can. That's the picture that's on the on the top of the page. And then I just went around the house just filming a whole bunch of different training seconds, you know, shut off the gas, turn off the breaker. And then I got to the front and I did the alley apple ventilation one, which it's probably one of the biggest hits anyway. Because it's funny to me. It's, but I, so then I just, while we were there, like they were all on lunch, I did about 8 or 10 of them, and then made the website, you know, made the Facebook page, and then uploaded one, and it's here we are, you know, 11,000 fans later.
Right on.
Which is crazy to me.
No, I absolutely love it, man. No, and like you said, the apple, the training second, and the great byline, training seconds.
Yeah, right. It you know, it captures the attention of the youth, man. That's where it's at. Is, you know.
That's what I want to know. Do you have a favorite training seconds that you filmed?
I would think the alley apple is a good one. The one where Champ is in it, and we were going, you know, I was trying to figure out, we had this another acquired structure, but I was trying to figure out a way to do it with him. He's like, I'll just say, you know, I'll start off, you know, training minutes with Mike Champo, and I'll push him out of the way and say, no, nobody's got time for that. And so the first take, you know, I was like, I think Robertson was holding the camera, and I was like, okay, I'm in frame here. And then, you know, Mike's in frame, and we, you know, kind of did a run through and stuff. And so then he started, and I pushed him. I gently pushed him out of the way, and he did like this pratfall, you know, and I was shocked. I was like, what? I thought I might break his hip or something, but, so that kind of stayed in. I had to reshoot it, obviously, because I was dumbfounded because he fell down. But that's another good one, you know, for him being such a good sport. And then Chief Bob Hoff, former commissioner of Chicago Fire Department, did the one where he was cleaning the toilet. You know, never forget where he came from. That was a pretty good one, too. A couple guest spots that were good. But, yeah, I love them. Most of them, anything that I put on the internet, I'd like, because I've filmed almost thousands of them, and I don't put them up there because I don't think they're funny.
Right. That was my next question, is how many, how long have you been doing it? How many have you filmed?
I think this is the fourth year, I think. And I don't know. I don't even know how many I've filmed. I don't even know how many are up, actually. I don't know.
Right. No, I get it. And like, what's the percentage, would you guess, on the ones that meet Ron's your requirement for posting?
Well, I think 100% of the ones that are up on that requirement. Fair. I have some that I haven't put up. I have a couple. And so, like, I don't enjoy mean jokes. I typically try not to hurt people's feelings. I like things that are funny, but not at someone else's expense. So I filmed a couple of them that I was like, nah, that sounds mean. You know, someone's going to think I'm targeting them when I'm really not. I would never do that, you know.
So, which leads me to my question. Final question on training seconds. What is the one you wish you could make that you haven't made yet? Like
there's so many. There's so many. I don't have the production team to do it. You know, there's just so many of them. I can't think of one that I want to do that. that I would want to let out anyway, you know.
Okay.
There's a few though. I mean, there's a bunch of them that if I could, you know, if I could up the production value, have a team, you know, that would be cool, but I don't have, you know, our current budget is $0 and
right.
And we've exceeded that so far.
Well, there you go. Everybody listening, if you know someone who wants to work for $0 but has a high creativity and wants to belong to a production team, then reach out and be part of Training Seconds.
Absolutely. Can you imagine the prestige that you'll get by being on the team?
I love it. So let's shift gears. I'm moving to the UL FSRI search and size up study that you are a part of. And just basically talk about being involved in that. Your takeaways, it's such a broad topic. So I don't know where you want to start with it.
It is. Well, it was a great opportunity to be on the inside of that. It was really awesome. Really, really awesome. There wasn't any surprises in my particular instance. I mean, I knew that, you know, smoke is bad. Time to fresh air is good, you know, all that stuff. And I said that in the beginning. Just the opportunity to network and to bounce ideas off of those guys was awesome. I wish I could have been involved in more stuff, because of COVID, we didn't get to meet. We met one time and then COVID hit and we were never able to meet the whole group again. So it was, we would go for some of the burns and, there would just be a few people there, you know, and that was the downside of it.
Right. Just the lack of ability to be together for it.
Yeah.
Which is kind of a microcosm of society. At the same time.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. We did a couple, you know, online meetings and, you know, we were disseminating information over the internet, but it still wasn't the same as being in the same room with all the guys and being able to talk to them about, you know, the findings and things like that.
Just building off those relationships. Like you already said, there was no big surprise. Was there anything that surprised you? Not necessarily in the findings or in the direction, but just being a part of it.
Like some of the findings, the amount of dose between floor level and even at 1 foot and then 3 foot is amazing. That wasn't something I expected.
Okay.
That was really about it. That was about the only thing, you know, and then going forward from that, using that information, we do have to change how we drag people, you know, like the old combat challenge way of getting under their arms and picking them up into the atmosphere is pretty bad if they're breathing.
And that was enough for you. And like saying, if they're breathing, this is something that should not happen just because of the actual data, the actual scientific measurements.
Yeah. And, any victim I've ever came across, I didn't check to see if they were breathing. I was just like, oh, they got to get outside, you know. So either they were, you know, beyond help or they just went outside immediately. So that it didn't really change anything on that. But
just being involved in it, did it change the way you teach, drag, et cetera?
Yeah. Yeah. I do talk about that more so now because we did, you know, anytime that we would teach, we just taught what we were taught and what we, you know, have always been, you know, it's in the books, right? So, and then you see it, again, the amount of time you see people dragging somebody or the dummy in the firefighter combat challenge is extreme. I mean, you don't see people dragging victims that much. So that's kind of, you know, embedded in your brain.
Sure.
Too. So.
And if it's in the books, it can't be wrong.
Hey, just a side note to that, since you brought that up, in 2013 we switched, Indiana switched to the fire engineering manual for firefighter 1 and 2, and I never had to say, oh, that's the way we do it in the book, but this is the way we do it on the street. It was I called them the golden years, but then we switched back to IFSA, so we're back to the old ways.
back to the two methods of training.
Yeah, yeah. This is what we do in the academy, and this is what we do in the street. It's not that bad. I know.
It's legitimate. It's not like we're making it up. There is a disconnect. Yes.
Yeah. Yes. No.
I'm not trying to put. Believe me, I'm not trying to put you on the spot with it. But yeah, we wouldn't. We have to bridge the gap in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
In fact, I sat in Kyle's class today, which is why he's here teaching the class to my department about the disconnect between the academies, the state academies, the funded academies, and the fire ground.
Yeah, I think that's always going to be there. I just don't think that there's a way to completely eradicate that. I really don't. I mean, there's enough, you know, just like you said, Kyle talks about it. I talk about it. A lot of people talk about it. There's enough material there that people have a whole class on, you know, going from the academy to the firehouse floor. So I don't think that we're ever going to get away from it, but as long as we can kind of, make our little changes in the academy, because you don't have to do it by the IFTA standard in Indiana anyway, as long as you meet the requirements.
Right. No, 100%. And it's good to have the discussions and say, hey, this is reality and this is how we're going to address it. It's not just bitching and moaning and complaining with no answer. It is saying this is the reality and we're going to address it.
Yep.
I love it, man.
Yeah, that fire engineering book was very underrated.
Yeah, like I said, we adopted it statewide for, I think it was 7 years of, it was awesome. It was awesome. But yeah.
For those of you that don't know, the chapters were written by subject matter experts instead of a committee. So like Jay Camilla and Dennis Laguerre, Shoup, you know, all those, Champo, you know, wrote the ladders chapter, forcible entry, you know, so very underrated.
Is the what's the name of the book?
It's fire engineering's. Now you put me on the spot.
Sorry.
On the spot.
I have one upstairs.
Yeah.
Put on the spot. Kyle's on it. We'll find out the name of the book.
Yeah, find the name of the book, Kyle.
Well, I'm on it,
and I'm asking because this is my ignorance speaking. So 100%, I'm just speaking from ignorance. So I'm not trying to put anybody on the spot. I'm saying what was the push to go back? Was it strictly the same old money, money, money?
Well, that's the easy way out, to tell you the truth. I mean, and that's what I, you know, shot off with first, you know, it's like, right. Oh, somebody's getting some money. But the truth is it wasn't updated, and I don't think it needed a lot of update, but that's what they said at the state level. And then there was also some offering of LMS with the purchase. And then, we did get, to not disparage IFSA completely, they did offer, like for the state of Indiana, you can get any IFSA publication if you're a firefighter in the state of Indiana for free.
Okay.
So there were some trade-offs and
Yeah, absolutely. Bad. And not even a rabbit trail I meant to chase down, but it was great. It was great. I love it.
It's fire engineering.
That's what happened.
Firefighter 1 and 2 came out in 2019. Then the 19th edition is what it's called. But Ron's absolutely right. You know, the credentialing programs, the states want, they want new books. And even if they change one sentence in a chapter, they can put out a new edition, you know, and that's one of the biggest problems. But as you said, there's a lot of those chapters that don't need to be rewritten.
No, there was a lot of really good stuff in there. I fall back to the ladders because I've always taught ladders, you know, around here. So there's really nothing that's bad in there. And, you know, because we don't have manpower bottom line, we don't have manpower. So, when I'm going over a two-person ladder, you know, 24-foot extension ladder carry, it just doesn't really apply. And then, when you teach it, then people do it. So, and then, you know, someone's going to say, well, you have to teach it because it's in the book. And then, you know, you start getting people doing it.
Right.
Yeah. Fire Streams was Jay Camilla and Jeff Shoup. Basic Fire Attack was Jerry Knapp and Chris Flatley. Traditions and Mission, Rick Lasky. Fire Service History by Don Cannon. John Best. What we got here?
Yeah.
Anyway, it's all subject matter experts.
Yeah, no, yeah. Definitely, definitely.
It's all on the Bro Drive as well, for at risk of being sued again by the big
guys. You got it. So, they're trying to teach you a lesson, Kyle.
So let's talk BES.
Yeah,
I'm a fan. Like I always ask people for topics to talk about. And I got back, not a fan of VES. And I want to hear the training seconds behind this.
It's not training seconds. This is legit. So,
okay.
So it start, you know, you call it the weekly scrap. So, you know, I came in here ready to knuckle up. So, when I first went to the very first meeting that we had, or the only in-person meeting we had with UL. They were going over all the previous studies they had, you know, fire attack, water, you know, water application, exterior water,
sure,
vertical ventilation, horizontal ventilation. And so one of the very first slides that they put up said that it said forcible entry is ventilation. So, I did learn VES, or that tactic, before I knew that there was an acronym for it. So, and we were doing it. We did it a lot from the back door. So, you know, the engine company or two was going in the front door. We'd slip around the back, open up the, you know, backside, soften the Charlie side, and then conduct our search from there.
Right.
So forcible entry is ventilation. You know, you step across the threshold that you've entered the building. And then if you look around, you've done a search, right? So everyone has done VES from the front door, from the back door. You can do it from windows and porches. Porches is a favorite, you know, but for that second floor window. But it's really just an acronym. And then the plus side of this argument that I'm posing is that all those chiefs that say, or the safety officers that tell you that VES is dangerous, you just tell them, hey, I'm not doing that. What I'm doing is a search. I'm just going in the window. and then someone brought up, and if you look in the literature, it's listed as a window initiated search. And
right.
I don't want another acronym. Please don't, you know, don't make me be the originator of another acronym. I want to do away with acronyms. So, I said that, and I was adamant about it. And, you know, Eric Wheaton was on the panel, who runs the VES website. And I said, sorry, Eric, you know, you gotta come up with a different domain name or something. but it's a great tactic, you know, but when I say I hate VES, people are like, what? But I just don't like the, realistically, you know, again, when you break it down, when I was taught, again, the way I was taught and the way the acronym was relayed to me was open the window, you know, take the window, let it blow, see what happens, and then you go in. And that was the idea behind VES. And then, you know, now we know that the ventilation isn't very good, because if that door is open and there's a victim in there, now we're at the flow path across them. We're, you know, we're radiating heat to them. But so that, and then again, in the search panel, you know, discussions and the findings, it's bad. Ventilation is bad. Back to that. The one thing that did surprise me, there is a, they had a door that was burnt almost all the way off, and they closed what was left of it, and it actually changed the conditions in the room, even that just a little bit. And you have to think about that. Even if you're, remember when we were taught ventilation from, you know, when I was taught ventilation back in the early 90s, they said, you know, take the screen out because the screen hampers 50% of the ventilation. Well, it's the same thing if you close half a door, right?
Yeah.
close half a door, it's 50% of the ventilation that it was getting. And then, so we don't want that. We may want the exhaust out of that room, but we don't want to exhaust the rest of the building through that room out the window. So then, you know, isolation. So if you want to put the I in the VEIS, then you should actually be isolating all the time. And that's one of the things that I said. So my captain, when I first went to truck four, he gave me a pair of vice grips that had a chain welded to it. And he said that since, you know, we're the inside team, we're going to conduct forcible entry. I want you to, you know, you put it on the doorknob, and when we force it, you pull it back shut so we don't have it just open, you know, with no water. And that was a long time ago, right? So he was a little bit ahead of his time, I guess, or he just knew something that wasn't in the book.
Right on. No, and is it strictly just a lack of understanding of the basics of flow path and ventilation and air movement, air tracks, if we want to go back all the way to Braidwood?
Yeah, yeah, right.
Is that really what we're talking about?
I think so. I mean, it's one of those things that's it's kind of hard to it's an old habit that's hard to break, right? I used to talk about when I would teach ventilation a long time ago before I knew about all the UL studies and things like that and flow path and didn't have words for the stuff. I would always talk about cop ventilation because there's tons of times when it's happened to us where the cops, break open a door, break out a window, and then they stand in front and point at the house that's fully involved. I'm like, there it is. So I would, that ventilation doesn't care if it's coming in from a window or a door or the roof. And then there was a little discussion in Kansas recently, not very long ago, I'll say that. Someone was talking about ventilation, like old school ventilation, like, oh, I know if I break these windows, it gets better. When you see that, when you hear the windows breaking and you see the lift and things like that, that you kind of, without the big picture, you kind of relay that to the other members, right? You say, oh, it got better when I heard the saw or when the windows started breaking. But in fact, we know that ventilation has two components. It's not just exhaust. It's also the intake. So when it leaves, something's got to come in to replace it. And I think that a lot of old timers just thought about it as exhaust, and it's not. So if we open up a bunch of stuff, it's going to get air in there too. And I think that a lot of people are starting to come around with that. I think a lot more people are kind of pushing that whole flow path and the isolation thing. I really do. I mean, I could be wrong, but I mean, from my standpoint, I've seen a lot more of that.
Solid. All right. We got questions coming at you from the audience. Tony Nunez wants to know, question for all of you. Do you think anyone will or is creating a real world standards book that will ever get used?
Well, the guys that I work with at IFSI are trying to come up with a legitimate engine manual, and it's going to be open source as much as possible.
Right.
Is it right around the corner? I don't think so. Not yet. I would have to talk to the guy that's in charge of it, but I think that we're going in the right direction. There's absolutely nothing that, it's not sponsored by anybody. There's nothing, that's off the table. There's nothing that, if it's sound tactics, we're trying to get it in there. So, and we're using subject matter experts as well. So, I think that may, and I know that there's some people around not too far from me that are doing, something like that for their academy. They're doing some more, more realistic approach to the academy training. But I think that if we can get that engine manual out and it's well received, and especially if it's open source, that a lot of people may take that and go a step further, maybe throw some other stuff in there, extrication and ladders and things like that.
Right on, Kyle.
That Fields has alluded to writing a manual for a while, like a manual to be produced and distributed. Aaron Fields has. The biggest problem that we run into here is credentialing. You know, I mean, no matter what's produced, it's just like fire engineering. So like when fire engineering put their book out, it wasn't, you know, that it was fire engineering that put it out. It was that guys from the street wrote the chapters. That was the biggest draw to that book. You know, it wasn't about the fire engineering name on it. It was about the content that was involved in those chapters. And the problem is that the states still have to adopt it. So like Texas, for instance, never adopted the fire engineering manual. So I didn't have a choice to use it. It was only either IFSA or Jones and Bartlett. And that's the biggest problem with credentialing, is that machine seems to be too big. You know, and we can't just say, you know, poo-poo with this without a solution. And then like what you're talking about, Ron, is bringing that solution.
Yeah, so in the state of Indiana, it says, and I don't know the exact wording, but it's something like the authority having jurisdiction dictates the, you know, what's acceptable. So as long as they pass the test, I think that you can basically teach anything you want, as far as I know, because there are people that are. And I'm not talking about good stuff. I'm talking about
right.
because again, that's a machine, you know, it's a big machine to get people that I've had people that I've talked to that they graduate the fire academy and they say, "Well, I want to get my instructor cert." You know, it's like, I think you should probably go to a couple of jobs or something.
Maybe catch a job
before you start teaching, you know. Maybe go on at least an EMS run or something. I don't know. But they do. I mean, you know, people, and to be honest, I'm an instructor because I looked up the guy that really inspired me was an instructor. So I get it. You know, you go through the academy and you get one instructor that's super fired up, super dialed in, you know, just super motivating. And then you want to be like them. And then you go, and then you're not like them. But, you know.
No, I love it. Jake Deal wants to know, how long have you been captain on squad four? And what's your favorite part of working for Gary?
That's a two-part question. I've been the captain at fours for 3 years. And we just put the squad in service, or reinstated the squad a year ago, a little over a year ago. We just passed the 1 year mark. So our our squad crashed with, because we had a big heavy rescue, only toolbox. It crashed with a truck going to a fire. So the both rigs were towed out. The squad actually flipped on its side, slid down the road.
Oh, wow.
And so it was never replaced. It was replaced with we had a pumper for a while that wouldn't pump, so there was no hose on it. And there was okay. Just like totes in the back.
Right.
And I have a picture of we put the roof hooks in the 2.5 discharge in the back, took the cap off, slid them in there.
Firefighter.
Yeah, and then it went to they bought some they bought two pickup trucks with the squad box on the back, you know, the Johnny and Roy style. And,
sure.
It was pretty funny because I'm not going to say who it was, but they had a pickup truck four-door cab and they put SCBA seats in the back, and then they tried to sit in it and realized there's not enough room. They had to take those out. And then they ran that one piece for a while, and then due to manpower shortages, they were riding with two people, and then it just went away, you know, just to brown it out, you know. And then our last chief really wanted to get a heavy rescue back and couldn't do it because we would have had to close an engine for the staffing, right? Or just like all overtime, and there's right. No way that would have happened. So he had the idea. I don't know if it was his idea, but had the idea of getting a rescue pumper. So that's what we have. I don't know which way to go here. It's a mirror. But it's a pumper, but it's got a rescue body on it. And we carry, you know, rope rescue, struts,
okay,
you know, heavy rescue stuff. And then we have the ability to bring trench panels, hazmat trailer, all that separate from the rig. Now, my favorite part about working in Gary is, and I don't really know who y'all is going to see this thing, but
nobody.
Yeah, right. Hopefully not the chief, right? Now the chief is pretty cool, actually. Current chief, and then we're in the interim, right? We don't know what's going to happen.
There's only like six chiefs in America that watch the scrap. You're safe.
Oh, you never know, man. You never know,
right?
Because the old chief, our old chief, would watch. He would. He's the kind of guy that would watch. But anyway, it's a really good place to work because there's a lot of fires and you do a lot of fire duty per run. Like it wasn't very long ago, just a couple weeks ago, we had a day where we had two runs, the whole shift, and it was two pin jobs. And then a couple days later, we had a day where we only had two runs and they were both working fires.
Nice.
So we do pretty good, you know, per person and still, and then, it's not the best thing about working there, but, we only send two engines and a truck to a fire and that's all three people that are on it. And so for right now, we're still operating as an engine. So on an assignment, we'll go as an engine. So there's only nine people working at a fire. So you get plenty of,
a lot of work,
you know, plenty of work. Yeah, yeah, I was joking about the, you know, Gary rehab is putting your hands on your knees while somebody changes your bottle and you go back in. And, you know, and two, three bottles is not unusual.
Right.
And then we get, and it's really kind of tapered off. But when I started, it was phenomenal work. I mean, like I said, I don't really think, and a lot of times, you know, it is, rubbish. It's a vacant that's, you know, fallen down and we just surround it and, you know, be better off just putting one engine there and not even putting any water on it. But the amount of work, like it's going to sound like an exaggeration, but in I think it was 2000 or 2001, I attended 37 working fires in 1 month. It was insane. Like we were going to three a day. It was three or four a day. Okay. And then I have a video. It's like 2 years now. 2 years ago, there was a guy that was running around lighting fires and there was like 22 structures at once. So the video is our rig that's in a spare goes by. And then a mutual aid ladder goes by, and then the chief goes by, and then the guy pans over to the house so that they pass, and it's just ripping. I mean, a whole place is blazing, and they just go right past it. And he's like, "Yeah, it must be going to a fire down the block,
right?"
Because there was no exposure and there was no people in there, so they just kept going. So
right. Oh man, what a great! I mean, and it's the only job I know in the world where I can be like, "Oh, two fires in one shift, great! That's awesome."
Yeah, it's awesome. You know,
yeah, what? Yes, wish I was there.
Yeah, don't tell the civilians that.
Right. No.
Yeah.
Not for the loss of property or anything like that or anything, but man, if it's going to happen, we want to be there.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's really why I went there. I used to ride. I worked across the state. In a suburban department, a combo job, one station. And I used to ride everywhere. I used to go to Gary and ride Chicago. I'd go to Detroit all the time. Detroit had like an on the job training program. You filled out some paperwork, proved that you had insurance and your chief signed off. And you were just like, you know, you were like the trialman. They would, you know, they would give you the nozzle, like whatever. They didn't care. So I had a ton of fun. And I, you know, I almost got a job at this very small department. And then there was one spot and me and another guy were in competition for this spot and he got it. And I was like, man, I probably would have been miserable there anyway. So I just wanted to work someplace that was really busy. I just wanted fire duty, you know. So, you know, Chicago, Detroit, Toledo, Indy, and then and Gary just hired me first. That's all. But, and again, I hope the Chief's not watching, but we don't have a lot of rules. Like, there's, I mean, I can't say it on the internet, but a lot of guys have gotten away with a lot of stuff. and you know, we do have the ability. And so, again, I do have the ability to do kind of experiment, you know, like with, you know, if I want to try something, I can try something. As long as it's not stupid, no one cares. Like, they don't care.
Right.
I have a nozzle that's that will go unnamed that will be on the rig soon.
The Breslin distributor.
Yeah, that one too. Yeah. but yeah, and it's, I mean, it, and there's a ton of really good guys that work there too. You know, I mean, I always tell people, you know, if your firefighters are ever complaining too much, I can get a couple of my guys to come over and tell you how bad it really is. You know, it's like, you just can't make it there unless you're pretty tough. Cause
right.
You know, no toilet paper. The very first time I went there, they said, bring toilet paper. I said, what for?
No, that's good. No, 100%. I went down, after Harvey, I went down to Houston. We sent a task force down from Oklahoma down to Houston, mainly to work on first responders' houses because they were all out working. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Cut sheetrock out, do, you know, all that kind of stuff. And we were hooked up with some good people from Houston that hooked us up with the church. As we visited the different firehouses while we were down there, you know, it was like, holy shit, we have it good. Mm-hmm. You just need that perspective. You know, that perspective, that bring toilet papers perspective.
Yeah. No cleaning equipment, you know, right. I mean, just crazy, you know, break it. This is going to sound like an exaggeration, but we had a supply guy that would literally break a bar of soap in half and you would get a half a bar of soap. No air conditioning in the bunk room. Yeah. They had smoke ejectors up on the lockers. And, you know, someone complained to the chief, and the chief said, well, I didn't have air conditioning when I was on the job.
Wow. No.
A bunch of sissies.
Yeah. That's
it. Yep. Yep. We used to lock the back door with a ratchet strap. It's all kinds of stuff. Everything was bolted down with steel, like big bolts, you know, because people would steal stuff.
Sure.
Woo. Oh, man. Here, I got one for you.
Yo.
Hey, what did you and learn most when you went to the UK with Elkhart? Like what stuck out to you with that experience?
Well, first of all, what an absolute amazing opportunity. I mean, I'm still pinch myself. The one thing I can tell you is those guys are exactly the same. It's the same people. They just have funny accents. you know, same jokes, same everything, you know, very passionate people and very proud people, you know, they do things very different with water application and they're, you know, just like anything, anytime someone comes to tell you something, hey, try this different thing. You're like, I don't know, man, what I'm doing is working. And so they did a lot of that. Which I completely understand. I totally get it. And that's one of the things that I told them when I met those guys in Florida at Atroc. I said, you know, I'm not arrogant enough to think that I know everything. And I would never tell you you're doing something wrong. And I also know that I can learn something from you guys. Because, you know, they want to do a good job. They want somebody to give them a high five and they want to, you know, feel like they've done something at the end of the day. But the water application thing, and I think some of them are starting to come around to that too. That is one of those things that it does work in the can and they've made it work. So they wholesale adopted the Swedes, stuff, you know, for fire attack. And that's why I asked the one guy, we were out to lunch one day, a couple guys from London. And I said, how did you guys go from, you know, a bunch of smooth bores during the Blitz to the 3D Fire Tech now? That's not even like three generations, right? That's very short amount of time.
Yeah.
And he said he really didn't know. He's like, I really don't know. And then he was also one of the guys that said, you know, they'll tell me, again, he's an inner city London firefighter. He's like, they'll tell me to hit the ceiling, but, you know, the fire's right there. I'm going to put the water on the fire. And they're like, no, hit the ceiling. He's like, but it's right there. So I think, you know, again, I would be willing to bet that they're doing stuff at the academy, and then they get out in the streets and they're like, oh, no, we don't really do that all the time.
Very familiar, just different accents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, man, those guys were top notch. And I know that there was some of the guys had animosity, you know, like when we were in London, there was a little bit of, one of the guys almost ran over McGrail and, you know, like he was mad because we were there, whatever. And, you know, again, it would happen at my firehouse, depending on who was there that day, you know. So I get it. And every, you know, again, the, you know, all the pranks, everything, you know, they had this, the one Paddington station in London, they had a room for their gear to dry it. It said the drying room, and someone crossed out the D and put C, you know, the crying room. And they were, I mean, and again, the guys that we were involved with at the fire college, absolutely top notch. The guys, my man Gerard from Australia is watching, and he says he's watching anyway. Top notch. My buddy Dave Payton from UK Fire College, awesome guy. John Chubb from Dublin, retired from Dublin, awesome guy. He was involved in the UL as well. Yeah, it was a trip of a lifetime for sure. I'm hoping to go back. You know, I don't have any aspirations of them inviting me back to teach or anything. But I'm just going to go, you know, and hang out.
No, I love it. A couple, one on hydraulic ventilation. Brian Schwab wants to know, hydraulic ventilation is a lost art and a forgotten tactic on the fire ground. What are your thoughts on the subject?
Oh, it's absolutely, you should be doing that. And again, I don't understand where that disconnect came from. That was absolutely drilled into me when I was young, you know, hit the room. Once the room is darkened down, find a window, fog it out. Right. Now you can do it with a smooth bore. I know you can. But we can't get rid of it. There's nothing that I can do unless I put these guys in a chokehold, they're not going to ever get rid of the fog nozzle. So, you know, but we've done it and it's a great tactic, and it uses, you know, again, back to the UL stuff. Every single fire was put out with less than 300 gallons of water. And that included hydraulic ventilation out the window. If you've seen all the studies, all the test burns, that was done. It's on all the videos.
Wow.
So it's absolutely imperative. Do it every 10. Especially, and it's a bonus if a chief is standing out in the yard. No offense.
Anything to add to it? I've thought of both.
I mean, hydraulic ventilation, it's unfortunate that people see it as a lost art. It's not something that's taught for a lot of people, but it's very effective, you know. Giving you another acronym, Ron, my buddy Derek Roberts taught me Uncle Sven. So make the fire say uncle, search, ventilate, check for extension, notify command. And how we're going to ventilate is hydraulic ventilation. So Uncle Sven.
Uncle Sven.
Yeah, Uncle Sven.
I love it. Stephen McCaffrey wants to ask, talking nozzles, because we talked about this a lot on the last scrap for those who were there. What's your take on the HEN nozzles, the high-efficiency nozzle? We finally got the whole fleet switched to smoothbore, and now a new nozzle's coming out. What's your take?
Is that the guy from Backdraft?
Yeah, I think it is.
There it is, McCaffrey.
Yeah, yeah.
Steven. Well, I would like to, and I've talked extensively about the nozzle with the two culprits, but I have an open mind.
Right.
I have an open mind. And I've talked to Ray too about this, getting some more data. It's unfortunate that it wasn't around when they were doing the water application study with the UL, because then, because that instrumentation and those experiments cost money. I mean, it costs money. And I don't think that the company that he's working for that's producing the nozzle has the ability to spend that much money on research and data collection. But I mean, it kind of makes sense. I mean, it makes, makes sense. I wouldn't take a hard line on any one of the nozzles because, as long as it's low pressure, I'm not saying that it's right, but I've seen a lot of fires go out with TFT 100 PSI automatics because I work in the land of TFT. I mean,
right.
The automatic nozzle was invented in Gary. So
thanks, Ron.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Appreciate it.
I was nowhere near the place. I wasn't even born.
Engineering seconds.
I wasn't even born yet. Yeah. And it is what it is. And we had them. We had, and it was kind of funny. I joke about it. We had 2-inch hose for a long time, and they had the exact same nozzle on both 150 or 1¾ and the 2-inch, and they're like, oh, we got to pull the big water, big fire. I'm like, it's the same nozzle. You're getting the exact same amount of water, or you're just reducing friction loss, and that's one thing that is a road that someone should have went down a very long time ago. The book's over there. Dave Fornell did. He did, and no one was listening.
Yeah.
I don't get it. So, and that was the fortunate thing on my job was I was able to apply 100 pounds of force over the course of 18 years, right. And no one listened. And then a guy came in and said the exact same words in the exact same order as I did, and we switched to Elkhart low pressure cheap nozzles. Yeah. Is what it is, man.
Yeah. Was he taller than you, Ron?
I think a little bit.
Yeah, they just couldn't hear you down there. That's what it was.
That's right. That's right. No, it's because I was from the inside. They don't want to hear anything about it.
No, and there's a lesson there. There's a lesson there for everybody listening. 100%. Like, absolutely. There is a lesson there.
Sometimes it takes a suitcase and the same message, man.
100%.
Yeah. Yeah. And at least we've gotten away from those nozzles.
And I want to know if the Stephen McCaffrey person is a real name or just a Backdraft fan. So please let me know in the chat if that's a real name or just a Facebook pseudonym. Because if not, it's one of the best firefighter names ever. John Shackelford coming at you. Ask Ron about the old way they did live fire training. I'm going to throw that at you. I'm going to hit the head. Kyle's going to run the show. Be right back.
Hey, John, I don't know what you meant by that.
Play the fifth.
Yeah, right. Does he mean how I did it, or does he mean how Gary Fire Department did it?
I think maybe Gary.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there was, that old school, everyone did it, I'm sure, in every, big city, but, we had vacants and they would just light vacants on fire. I mean, I've been a part of a lot of non-1403 compliant vacant burns with only, one company there, but, and then when I was in the academy, there was a lot of mask appreciation days, if you will, like they would tell you like, hey, go in there with no mask on. You're going to really appreciate your mask after this. But, I remember when I was in the academy, in the academy, we were doing an acquired structure burn. And, one of the guys said, hey, take your glove off and feel the wall. And they had built a fire like inside it was a balloon frame home. And so there's a fire raging in the stud bay and I burnt my hand. Like my hand was burnt. And then like the fire progressed and then like people are jumping out of windows and it was mayhem. But, luckily nobody ever got killed. I'm sure, we've had a couple exposures, but, Maybe a couple sprained ankles from jumping out windows, but and, you know, again, you know, that there was a lot of that bravado and machismo, you know, back in the day that a lot of guys got away with, and they would do that, you know, just to show you that they were tougher than you. And you know, it's not right, but it happened. I'm sure, you know, anybody with any, you know, 30 years on the job had seen it. You know, it's just, it's crazy. I went to an acquired structure. Everyone will remain unnamed, but there was this guy, a retired guy from a large metropolitan department on Lake Michigan, that had a whole bunch of people in this room, and he lit this couch on fire. No one had air tanks, and the exterior stairs were missing. So it was like a 4-foot jump. Like, I was like, what are you doing? But
who told you, this was a good idea?
Right. Yeah, because someone showed him, I bet. Yeah. I bet they did.
Yeah.
Thank you, Kyle, for being here, because that's like, usually I just have to leave the guest alone. So,
I would have told some jokes or something.
No, 100%. They've always handled it well. No, I'm coming size up on the radios and what we can do better, and how much of a fan you are of story time.
Yeah, this is turning out to be very unpopular, but and I can see when I start to tell people, like, if I go in depth and they kind of start to agree with me, they'll still circle back and be like, yeah, but so I just don't think that a size up over the radio, you got to go again.
No, this dog is trying to burrow their way in here. It's pretty funny. Sorry, Ron.
No, it's okay. But I just don't think that there's any value in telling this story about what you see when you get there, because it's not going to change what I do. Like, and I've seen people get upset about it too. Like, oh man, you know, they said there was a, you know, 30 by 50 and it's actually 33 by 55. You know, it's like, come on, man, that doesn't even make any sense. And then, you know, my point is that I can't do anything until I get there. It doesn't matter. And I know, like, yeah, again, the way we should do it, it doesn't always work out. You know, no one follows all the rules, but it should be the first engine's fire attack, second engine's water supply, and the truck does everything else. So really, what are you telling me? Like, I don't, like, if you say it's a two-story, I'm still going to decide what line I'm going to stretch when I get there, or what ladder I'm going to throw when I get there. I can't climb up on top of the rig halfway there and start pulling lines off, you know? So I mean, and like I said, everyone kind of agrees, and then they'll circle back. But like, yeah, but man, if you got to tell them, you know, it's like, I don't get it. Like, if I tell you we're going to work, like, you should know, like, mm-hmm. I'm going to get off the rig with my air pack on and my tools, and then I'm going to look at the building and I'm going to decide what I'm going to do. And no matter what you say, I'm still going to form my personal size up, and I'm going to do what I think is right, or complete the assignment that I was given. So if you give out assignments on the way there, like, hey, there's someone hanging out of the second floor window on the Charlie side, could you get a ladder back there? Absolutely. That's good information. That's good information. So, because, but still, I still can only mentally prepare for it. I can't take the ladder off until I get there. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah. Now, is there a minimum? What's the minimum then on what should be transmitted? I'm asking. I love this.
I'm all for it's a fire. You know, that's fine. Because I was we were out. I was acting officer on truck one. We were out collecting with the boot, right? And right. we get a fire that's three blocks away from where we're standing, apartment building, occupied, three-story, fire in the basement. So I was like, oh shoot, you know, trying to get dressed, trying to throw the money filled boot in the rig, and we I'm just buttoning the top button on my coat when we pull up. So I grabbed the mic and I said, we got a fire, and I threw it down and I got off the rig and I went to work. And no one, because it was occupied and people were, you know, fleeing the fire, no one said a word to me. No one said, hey man, that was a pretty dumb size up. Like, they all just got off the rig and went to work because there was so much to do.
Yeah.
So is it just looking for something to train on to make like, is it fixing a problem that doesn't exist, or?
I don't know. It's just been beat into everybody's heads. Like,
sure. No, 100%.
Even if I prove to you that it's crazy, everyone's still like, yeah, it is crazy, but I'm still going to do it. Cause I mean, I got to do it.
I'm not sure I agree 100% with you. That's what I'm saying. Like, even me, I'm fighting my bias here saying, wait a second, you need to know if it's two story or not. You need to, you know, that's me fighting my bias as I talk to you, but I can't figure out how I feel about this.
Yeah, I'm telling you, it's just been beat into your head that you have to say that. You have to say that because they just had a call for a fire today, and everyone got there, and everyone was given different size-ups, right? So I just don't think that there's a big value to it is all. I just don't because if someone the first rig gets there, well, who does the size-up for the first rig?
Yeah.
Dispatcher. I mean, they're pulling up with nothing, right?
Yeah. I think there's a fire at this location.
Yeah, they said there was a fire here. And then if you get there and say, there is a fire, I'm like, okay, we're going to go to work. That's it. So I came up with this, and then I realized I kind of backtracked, and I was like, wait a minute, the FDNY does it. They don't give size ups. It's like 1075.
Yeah.
That's it.
So do you think it ties back into just knowing your district better?
I don't know. I just don't think anything would change, though. It's okay. I mean, what's going to change? Again, you're fighting the bias. It's stuck.
No,
in your
head. I'm with you.
Been beat in there.
I'm accepting that I'm fighting a bias. I'm just digging in. I love it. I love the question. I'm not offended. I hope you're not with my question.
No, I'm not. No, not at all. No. I absolutely love the pushback because, I mean, if for some reason you change my mind, then I'm gonna, right. I'm gonna keep saying that. And again, that's one of the things that I think is super important is an open mind, because everyone closes their minds. Like,
yes.
You know, that was the thing with the UL. Everyone's like, oh, those guys in the lab coats in the lab, no fire is the same. It's like every single fire acts exactly the same, given the same set of circumstances.
They're all in boxes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Physics. You can't overcome physics. There's nothing you can do. You can be mad at gravity, but it still works. Like it's still working.
I love it. I love it. And that's what I'm saying is even as I'm at, because you said it, you said people agree with me and then they're like, but what about this thing that I've always believed, you know?
Yeah.
But what about this assumption?
Yeah. And they do circle back to it because, I mean, I can't think of what would really change if, so the way that I present it is, you know, if I send you right now to 123 Main Street, supposed to be a place on fire, supposed to be a house on fire. And you get to 123 Main Street and there's absolutely nothing showing. But 122 across the street is ripping. Like it looks like this. Like, no, there's nothing here. Yeah, there's a shimmy tube. No, it's ridiculous. So I just don't see any value. If there is added value to it, I'll take your word for it, but I know that if someone says, okay, or, you know, bring a hydrant. Yeah, that's fine. I'll bring a hydrant, or, you know, I'm second due. I'll bring a hydrant. That just seems natural to me. Right. So, and then I'm going to decide if I haven't been given any orders, I'm going to decide what I'm going to do. So if I get there first and no one gave me a size up before I got there, they just said the house was on fire. I get there. Yeah, it is on fire. We're going to stretch the line. So why do I have to tell somebody? I mean, because it goes. I mean, there's some places that will say we're stretching 150 foot of inch and 3/4 line to the alpha side. We're going to force the front door. Like all this crazy stuff. Like that means nothing to me. That changes nothing to what I do when I get there.
No, I love it. It's interesting. Because absolutely interesting. Actually challenging how I teach certain classes on size up. So I actually love it. So thank you.
Yeah. One of the comments in the chat was Stephen McCaffrey, the backdraft man himself. He said, some systems are built on what structure is, i.e. commercial versus residential. And I would say the dispatch is going to tell you that. I mean, the size up, I guess just confirming, yep, it's a commercial building, and yep, it's on fire. Come help me.
Right. And I don't have any problem with that. So if you pull up and you're like, it's the Walmart. I mean, and again, I don't know what that's going to change when you get there. Like, I don't get it. Like, if you get, you know, if they say it's a, if you get there, you get sent to a rubbish fire and you get there and the, you know, the whole place is rocking. You're like, oh, upgrade it. I'm going to need some more people. Or if you get sent to a house fire and it's a commercial building, you say, oh, a commercial building, I need more people. Then they're going to be dispatched. I still don't. Again, that's the, yeah, but we got to do this. And it's like, I can't get my head around needing that. It's not going to change what I'm going to do as far as I know. And again, if someone wants to tell me how it's going to change how I operate, I'll do it. But
now we got to sit down. We got to sit down with a beer and figure out the absolute essentials.
As soon as I finish this water, I'm going to crack open a beer.
Okay.
So if you want to stick around, whatever. I'm
absolutely safe. No, we're going to figure out the bare essentials of the what needs to be in a scene size up.
I was going to say, what is your mindset of what needs to be said when you get there? I'm going to work.
Well, yeah. So a lot of times guys will, even in the past, will say work and fire. That's it. So Then the chief gets there and, and that's okay for them to start talking about stuff. That's fine. I'm serious, though. I mean, like I said, if the chief is there and he's giving out orders, that's fine. I love that. That's even better. Yeah. Okay. I know what I'm going to do now.
I feel like, and this is what I'll say, I think that you need to confirm what building is burning. And if it's burning,
it's on fire. So this one. Right.
What is on fire and if it's on fire? So you could reverse that. Say, is it actually on fire and what is it?
So this fire is a pool hall. It's three blocks from my firehouse. So they sent us on a building fire and I look out the door goes open and I look out. I'm like, oh man, it looks like a car fire at the gas station. It looked like, cause there's a gas station right across the street right there. So I was like, well, it's a gas station, right? Just a car at the gas station. And then we rolled down there. I was like, oh no, it's a pool hall. Right. So, again, it didn't change what I was going to do though. I had to, because of, so there was so much fire and the chief kept saying, there was a chief that was there. We need water supply. So I left my guy at the hydrant. And then I stretched our 2 1/4 pre-connect off. And that's me right there with the 2 1/4. So, I wasn't being heroic. I was just, whatever.
Newspaper water. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I mean, I was just using the tank water. Right. So, yeah. I mean, I still don't think that it would change anything that's going to happen. Like, no matter what I say, if I say the dimensions, what is that going to mean? Like if the chief doesn't tell you to bring a hydrant or, if your SOP doesn't include a hydrant on the first do or second do or third do or whatever, the orders, I'm okay with orders, but if you just say we got a fire, I think that that's enough for me and I'll do it again, because it's been beating my head and people get all worked up about it. I'll say 2-story frame, fire on 2, whatever. I'll say it for them, but it's not for me.
No. I'm not trying to be obtuse or anything. It's just, like you said, you're challenging my biases, and I'm like trying to make sure that I'm running it through my matrix, saying, "Is he right? Holy crap, is he right?" And I keep running it through with the yeah buts.
It's hard, man.
I know.
It's hard.
I hope everybody listening runs it through their yeah buts. So
yeah, I've spent a good portion of my career talking about biases. It's huge, I mean, it's very, it's fascinating, that we do have all of that. I mean, it works, it's there for a reason, but, some of them are bad, right?
Sure.
But if you don't like somebody that doesn't look like you, that's a very bad bias, right? Yeah. But in the old days when you were in the cave, if you saw somebody new, they were going to steal your deer and you'd die, right?
Die, right.
So it's stuck in there, but And that's what I'm saying with
and I think it was Aristotle, like forever ago, said it's the mark of an educated person to be able to look at something and even though you disagree, examine the merits of it, you know, without, you know, coming to blows. And that's a horrible paraphrase, but absolutely what we're talking about.
You sounded just like him.
Yeah.
I would say the biggest benefit would be the chief. I mean, as the chief, you know, I treat chiefs like babies. You know, babies cry when they're hungry. Chiefs are hungry for information. So like if you feed him information, he's not going to cry wanting it, you know? So I would assume that, you know, the chiefs are going to be the ones that are pushing it. Like, what do you got? What do you see? How big is it?
No, that's well, very
drive a little faster. And you'll be able to see exactly what I'm
saying. It's smoky in here. I got nothing. It looks like this, chief.
That was one of the worst things is when you step off the engine and you're now stuck to the front yard. We discussed that today, talking about that today. You're stuck in the front yard and you're no longer in control of that information. And that's one of the hardest things is to step back and say, no, give them time.
Yeah.
You hated it when they called you every 2 seconds when you were inside. So why are you doing it now? But you are starving that information.
But see, now that's different. So, okay. So if you say, you know, if things are looking bad and you say, how's it going in there? I'm like, hey, I think we're winning. What does it look like out there, chief? And you say, come on out. I'm going to come out. So that's good information. I'm just saying when I pull up, I'm like, oh, it's 30 by 20. It's got black shutters. it's like they could use a roof.
Yeah. Car in the driveway. Mailbox is open.
The mailbox is open.
I like it. I really do like it. I really do. And you've answered the question beautifully on the needing information.
Yeah.
Making sure that the information from the inside is matching the information from the outside is a much different story than the initial size up.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And again, that initial size up wouldn't change it. Like I said, if you pulled up to the address and the place across the street was on fire, you wouldn't say, we're in service. You know, you said 1, 2, 3.
It's obviously not here.
It's obviously not here. This is somebody that
lives
across the street, though.
What do you got, Kyle? Before I move on.
Oh, man. Nothing.
All right. Then I'm going to move on to book or books that you think firefighters should be reading. Doesn't have to be firefighting books, just books in general.
We're
huge book fans.
Yeah, I enjoy reading too. I look at pictures sometimes. You absolutely have to read Report from Engine Company 82. You just have to read it. Again, there's perfect size up. You know, he's calling a second alarm, and it was just a tree in the courtyard. Deep Survival is a really good one. Thinking awesome. Fast and Slow is really good. Kinnaman and Tversky is really good stuff.
What was the last one?
The Thinking Fast and Slow.
Okay.
By Danny Kahneman and whoever, the other guy.
Kahneman and the System Tversky, One, System Tversky. Two.
So. Yeah, that's really good stuff. And then I just got the one from Tlaib. I forgot what it is. I have to get back to you. I'll remember it in a second. Something about mistakes, whatever. But the stuff that deals with, you know, how you think, because again, biases are bad, or sometimes they're good. Shortcuts are good, but there's flaws in that too,
right?
And people don't know it. There's literally, you know, you could tell them about the System One and System Two, and you could. That's one of my favorite things is show somebody a picture that gives them the shortcut that's wrong, and
right?
They have to figure it out. It's like, man, it's hurting my brain. And it's like that's what's supposed to happen,
right?
Physically painful.
That's how we function. That's how we function as human beings.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's, you know, and then when you talk about, firefighting, Fire Stream Management, by Fornell is imperative reading. If you can get it, I know some people have a hard time getting it.
Second edition coming out soon.
Yeah. That's what I heard. Do you know when?
Very soon. It's in the technical review phase right now.
Okay. What do you know what they changed? Have you heard what they...
I heard that there is a new nozzle stream in the chapters of the books that is currently being discussed in multiple platforms.
Ah, okay. That'll be good. And then Fireground Tactics by Emmanuel Fried from the 60s, I think that's important, you know, because you can see some of those things that did change for a good reason. You know, the whole breathing air off the fog nozzle doesn't work. Believe it or not. But there's a lot of good, there's a lot of stuff, you know, just like with the Braidwood stuff, you know, there's stuff that still applies.
And full circle.
That has stood the test of time.
I love it, man. I absolutely love it. I love the brain stuff too, man.
Yeah, man.
Yes. We're going to have to, again, when we get those beers, at some point when you quit drinking water.
I just did.
Just now.
Yeah, just now, yeah. I didn't want to get stewed and start fighting, you know.
Right. All right, so we're going to the five questions for firefighters. This is something we've been doing since almost the beginning. And it started out as the five questions for firefighters. It evolved over time and became the five questions for firefighters version 2. We are currently at the five questions for firefighters version 3.2. It's the third iteration of questions asked over the history of the scrap. So my question to you is, are you ready for the five questions for firefighters version 3.2?
I'm as ready as I'm going to be. I looked them over, but
the rules are this, is there are no correct answers. There are only your opinions.
All right.
And the points are arbitrary. They're assigned by me with the assistance of my lovely assistant.
Oh, I was unaware I was going to be scored. This is even better.
Yes, and
we should have brought cards. We should have brought cards, the 9 points.
If we'd have thought it through, we would have brought cards. And, of course, the audience is always a scoring factor.
All right.
So here we go. Question one, Ron, what is the skill that has carried you through your fire service career?
Having an open mind. That for sure. Hands down. I mean, some of the other skills are important, but having an open mind and being able, you know, question, not necessarily question authority, but, you know, have questions. Questions, knowing the what, you know, finding out the why.
I love it. And I don't know how Kyle feels. I'm going to give you max points.
Max points.
Max points. But mainly because you tied it back into that beautiful Aristotle quote earlier.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
100%. Number two, it's job town. It's time. You're in route and responding. Think of the scene from Backdraft where he slaps that cassette into the tape deck. What song are you playing in route?
Well, since there's no recorded version available of a long size up, I'm going to have to say the Ghetto by Too Short. That's one of my favorites.
Ghetto.
Yeah. And if anybody watching knows about the video, they'll know why I picked that.
Two for two, max points. Number three, I love this question. I really do. What is your, and I've laughed so much tonight. I think I've laughed more than any scrap ever. What is your favorite fire service tradition?
Helmets. Traditional helmets. Is that what you're talking about? Am I getting that?
I'm sure that? There's no right or wrong answer.
Leather helmet, man. Leather helmet.
I'll let you answer.
Yeah, max points, man.
Max points.
Absolutely.
Max points. Absolutely.
Honestly, though, if I would think of anybody that would have tried the Euro. Did you try the Euro while you were over there in the UK?
I've tried it before. I've tried them. And yeah. I did. I put it on.
Yeah.
It's not horrible. And again, I don't want to interrupt, but that's one of the discussions that I had with the guy. You know, it's like, this is not a problem that needs fixing. There's no, I don't know anybody that has ever said, oh, he would have lived if he had a plastic helmet on, you know.
He could have stuck his head in that small place.
he could have easily gotten out, you know. Like that old, again, there's these myths that go around, you know, like the guy that got hung up by his helmet, you know, and died because he got, you know, because his chin strap didn't break away, you know. It's like, yeah. Or, you know, there's so many that everyone, I know a guy that did that. No, you don't. You really don't.
You don't know that guy.
You don't know that guy. You know, it's like the guy in fifth grade that was able to swing so high he went up over the swing set. He didn't do it.
Yeah, he didn't do it.
Tie it back.
Fixing a problem that we don't have. It's there's, you know, there's no, people aren't, you know, dying from injuries because they have a bad helmet or a good, you know, surviving because they have a great helmet on. Like, yeah. I just, you know, again, those guys have their biases about that. And they're like, oh, it's the greatest thing in the world. It's like, I don't know. I don't think it is.
And I like the fact that you tied it right back to open-mindedness because you said you did try it.
I did try it. Yeah, I tried it. I've tried everything. I tried their thing. I tried it.
Ooh, I was going to ask you that earlier. Were you actually in the can when they did any of that in the UK?
And no. What was your observation? No. I was actually, I had the pleasure of escorting a European team with American Tactics.
Nice.
And they enjoyed it.
And they came out wet and soggy.
Yep. And yep. They said that they didn't get steam burned. And that's when all the guys outside are like, oh, my God, all that steam. And they're like, no, it wasn't that bad.
Actually,
because, you know, they're owning the space. You know, come on.
Yeah.
But again, that's a big hurdle for those guys to ever overcome.
That's worse than the whole scene size up bias.
Way worse than the size up thing.
No, I'm with you.
Yeah. Were they able to teach you anything about fire behavior? Like,
oh, man, those guys.
Yeah.
They're riding a submarine to the deep dive, man.
Yeah.
They're way into it. They go way and they do accountability. That's probably the best accountability I've ever seen. And oh, wow. The most, like, you could stop a guy that's in probie school and ask him about fire behavior and he's going to blow your mind, man. Those guys know that stuff, man.
For sure. I think they have
that's their thing.
They have an extreme understanding of fire behavior and our water application, in my personal opinion, and I'm sure yours as well, is a little bit better. It's agreed-based. You know, it's better for us, better for trapped civilians. And if we can come together and bring those two together, I think we'd be unstoppable. But I don't know that ego will allow us to do that.
And yeah. Yes. And those guys, they're fighting a bunch of construction stuff, too. It's not, you can't just give them a smoothbore nozzle and fix their problems. I mean, there's a lot of other stuff going on. They have building construction problems like crazy. Yeah. One stairwell in high rises. One.
Yeah.
And it's not very big either.
It's a problem. Sorry to derail the.
No, I love it. That's what makes it so great. I absolutely love it. Leather helmets. I love it. Max points, 3 for 3, no pressure. We're number 4. This one's on the clock.
Okay.
Because you only get 1 minute to answer it.
Okay.
And long story short, we had to put it on the clock because people were meandering and and they were giving honorable mentions. And we need to
decide.
Yeah, yeah. You know what I'm saying? So here it is. Who are the 4 people you would put on your Mount Rushmore of the fire service? Go.
I'm going to take a minute to say that I'm going to leave a lot of people out. There's only 4 spots. So I'm going to say Andy Fredericks. Do I have to justify why I'm giving him the...
You got a minute.
Because I met him '97, and he came to the firehouse a couple of times. He's a big fan of Gary. And he talked good about us at the firehouse, too. Number 2 is going to be Ray McCormick because he's helped me with so much stuff. I can't thank him enough. Along with Mike Champo, because again, helped me with a ton of stuff. I wouldn't have training seconds if it wasn't for Champ. And, and Ray got me a lot of other places. And then finally, Captain Bill Hanna, from my job, who, taught me all the right stuff as opposed to those guys that teach you how not to be an officer.
Beautiful. With time to spare, not a ton of time. So wait,
I can make those seconds. Oh, bro, that's
so many training moments in those seconds. Fredericks, McCormick, Champo, Hannah.
Yeah,
I get it right. Beautiful, brother. Yep. Max points 100% for coming in under time. Absolutely, and I love the Andy Fredericks. Absolutely, is the number one person mentioned in the Mount Rushmore. And the fact that you had a personal connection with him loving Gary and everything like that, man, absolutely, I love that. I really do love that.
Yeah, we had actually they were at the firehouse in the morning and we caught a fire and they were taking pictures. He was doing something over in Schaumburg and the guy was driving around, and then we had a fire at night and we had a problem with the hydrant. The hydrant was broken, and so I exited the second floor to the relative safety of the porch roof, and they were standing in the street. I'm like, "You guys getting this? You getting this?"
Oh man.
Final question. It's the question. Go.
Gerard Mann's in the chat, buddy. And he said, when you did your American tactics in the can, I'm assuming that he's commenting on that, is the coldest he's ever been in a can.
Yeah. Yeah. He was there.
Yeah.
He was there.
So shout out to Gerard.
Oh, again, I said it in the beginning, top notch. Yeah. He's a gentleman. I enjoy his company.
Final question. It's the question that's never changed since the beginning of the scrap. Heavy fire, searchable space. Would you rather be assigned to the nozzle or first in on VES?
Ooh.
I know.
It's a trick question.
I was waiting on this one.
It's the same question.
Yeah.
I'm gonna go with the search, man. I'm gonna go with the search. I spent most of my time on a truck. Not that we can, again, because of our staffing, we've never really been, you can't just like strictly just be on the truck. So,
sure.
And then, you know, transfers are punishment. So, you know, they send you where you don't want to go. You want to be at the airport, they send you to the squad. You want to be at the squad, they send you to the airport. You know, it's same.
I love it. I love the answer. I love the reason why. And that makes it officially Ron Smith 5-for-5.
Yes.
Max points.
Yeah.
And that officially makes it 219. There you go. 219 scraps in the books.
Yes. Hey, yes. Brother. 5-for-5.
That's right.
I want to see a training seconds on this.
I'm glad you called it search, because I watched a short documentary about VES one day.
I did too.
And I learned that 100% of trapped occupants are found inside the structure.
That is my favorite training seconds. I almost wanted to bring it up earlier, but since Kyle brought it up.
I caught some heat from that. It, like this guy, one guy started pushing back. I'm like, what do you not understand? This is not serious. Like I can be serious, but this is not serious. Well, man, you know, and he just kept going on. I was like, what? Yeah. And he was from Canada. I said, this is getting lost in translation, brother. When you change it to your language, you think I'm being serious, and I'm not.
Oh, man.
That way, just to keep erasing letters until it was just down to search, and I love it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just search. I'm telling you, it's just search. Because when they put the slide up that said forcible entry is ventilation, I was like, I gotcha. No more VES. Never again.
I wondered about my phrasing of my fifth question. I honestly did. But you answered it with search.
Search, yeah.
Yeah.
I'd rather be on the search. It's not like I get the nozzle anymore. I point flashlights and stuff, but I'm not gonna say that's not a good time too. It is, you know, the knob is the job. I did not take this job to throw ladders. I did not. I took the job to squirt water. That was the idea. You know, I thought we were doing it a lot more often than we. You know, Johnny and Roy had us going a lot more to a lot more fires, but, you know, that's why I joined the fire service, was to put the water on the fire. And then I found out the truck had a bigger district. I'm like, wow, I shouldn't be on the truck.
They tend to go to more places.
Yeah, right. A much bigger district. We got to go.
Love it. And that officially makes it 219 in the books. Ron Smith, thank you for sharing your evening with us and the audience. If someone wants to get a hold of you, what's the best way to do so?
The best way to do so would be on Facebook, probably. You can email me at gfdtrk4@yahoo. But there's a lot of stuff in that one, but I'll answer it. Or, you know, reach out on Instagram. Anything, any training seconds platform is fine. I'll be at FDIC. I'm easy to find. Be there all week.
Beautiful. Let me see. Housekeeping. Go to firehousevigilance.com. Become a vigilante. Join. Here's the deal. Today, Kyle's been teaching in my city all day. That's why he's here. That's why he's the co-hosting. He's been teaching class in my – and I said, hey, you want to come co-host the scrap? He said, yes, I do. So we were in an extremely time-compressed. And I called Ron and said, hey, do you mind if Kyle co-hosts? He said, no, not at all. It'll be a blast. And so anyway, long story short – is I did not even get to ask Ron if he would be a part of the scrap after party. So I'm going to assume he's going to hang out for 20 minutes afterwards. But
I still have a beer left. Yeah.
Okay. We're going to switch to water at that point.
Yeah.
So vigilantes, scrap after party here in a few short seconds. When the scrap ends, I will post the link for everybody. And here's the deal. The vigilantes always promise that they're going to bust the chops of the guest. They never have to this point. But tonight may be the exception.
It's fine. There's a lot of guys. I don't know if they'll come in, but there's a lot of guys that said they were going to watch that. They're chop busters. So
yeah, that's what I'm saying. I
fully expected a lot
if
more.
There was a chance that it was going to happen. I feel like this is the one. Other than that, man, if you're not a vigilante, go become a member. Firehousevigilance.com. I won't belabor the point. Here's the deal. This is a very important one to me. There are 14 days left. 14 days and a few hours, give or take, until November 27th, Cyber Monday. That is when firemanship tickets go on sale. And so, man, mark it on your calendars. Be ready. Firemanship, it's one of the biggest things that's going to happen. Mark your calendars. That's all I got. My brother, Ron Smith, thank you for being such a phenomenal guest. Kyle Romagus.
Awesome co-host. Awesome co-host. Hey, yeah. Could I say also, didn't mention it, but the Yard Foundation, if you guys could join up. And I know sometimes those guys have mean jokes and it hurts, but they do such good stuff, man. They do such good things for firemen in need, the Yard Foundation. You don't have to participate and hit it hard from the yard. I get it. It's, again, mean jokes. But the stuff that they do in the Yard Foundation is just absolutely phenomenal.
And you get t-shirts. 100%. Like we discussed it, like not even 30 minutes before we went on. I was like, "We gonna bring up the yard or not?" I was like, "Dude, I love the yard, but I also sometimes I'm like, ooh, yeah, but no, I love the yard."
Yeah, right? Yeah, 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 yeah. A lot of people get hurt, and I get it, and you know, and death threats are made, but I don't. And contrary to popular belief, I do not have a fake profile on that page. I just don't comment because I know I'm scared too.
I have a shirt. I want to be fireman. It's one of my favorite shirts. And on the back it says the Yard Foundation, and it is a phenomenal organization on the yard and what they do.
Yep.
So.
Yep. And you know, again, you don't have to participate with that other stuff, man. You don't.
All right. Thank you for mentioning it. Cause I wasn't going to bring it up, but thank you for mentioning it because it is a good charity. Vigilantes, I will post it in the private group. If you're going to be in there for the after party, it'll be starting in a few short minutes. Ron Smith, he's going to come on, be roasted. Audience, you make the scrap magical. I say this every time, but it is 100% the truth. Without your questions, without your involvement, the scrap doesn't exist. So thank you for tuning in live each and every week. Everybody give a shout out to Kyle. He's always there, but today he's hanging out on camera and being the badass co-host that he is. Thank you for tuning in live. I love you all. Remember, mutts don't scrap. I hope the tones stay silent unless it's burning. Everybody, stay safe out there.
Thanks for listening to the Weekly Scrap. Please subscribe and please share. We'll see you at the next episode.